pretty severe respiratory issues.
Isabel Gonzalez-Whitaker is with the nonprofit Moms Clean Air Force, a group of parents working to protect kids from pollution and climate change. She says given federal rollbacks, the group is focusing on state and local advocacy.
This is a trying time, so we're looking for opportunities where we can find them to drive impact.
For example, they're pushing for state policies that limit air pollution, advocating for states to plug abandoned oil and gas wells that emit methane, and building support for more electric school buses. And they're encouraging parents to turn their concerns into action by writing letters and op-eds, submitting testimonies to lawmakers, or lobbying elected officials.
I think the more that we rally and the more that we provide voice to our discomfort and our disappointment, the less long, hopefully, that we have to live under circumstances that are super scary.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, September 23rd, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our producer for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, Tramel Gomes, Eric Galatas, and Dr. Anthony Lysowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
You're listening to Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. My guest today is author and journalist Paul Koberstein. I spoke with Paul in 2024 about a book he co-authored called Canopy of Titans, The Life and Times of the Great North American Temperate Rainforest. I recently read a great new article of his titled Greenwashing in the Evergreen State, exploring how an industry-funded, quasi-academic entity got the democratically controlled Washington State Legislature to endorse industrial logging as beneficial for the climate. Now, I am a sucker for exposing industry greenwashing, so I'm delighted to have Paul back on the show to talk about his deep dive into the shady world of the Consortium for Research on Renewable Industrial Materials, or CORIM for short, as we'll be referring to them throughout the show. You can find Coast Range Radio free and ad-free on all podcast apps. And as always, huge thanks and gratitude to the community-supported radio stations that carry the show. Quick note, I'm looking for volunteers to help me produce the show. That means hosting, researching, editing. There's all kinds of ways to help out, and no experience necessary. I can totally train you in any aspect of making this program. To learn more, if you've got feedback, guest ideas, whatever, you can email me at coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Okay, Paul Koberstein, welcome back to Coast Range Radio.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
Yeah, let's jump right in to your new article, Greenwashing in the Evergreen State, which you published with your longtime collaborator, Jessica Applegate, in Earth Island Journal. And just a quick note, I'll put a link to the article in our podcast show notes, and you can tell folks, you know, where else they can find it. But yeah, I was hoping you might, you know, by way of a quick overview, just give us a reading of the first, you know, two or three or so paragraphs, because I think that kind of lays out your thesis pretty well here.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. So This is from the beginning of the article in Earth Island Journal, the autumn 2025 issue. Over the last several decades, a large body of ecological research has confirmed what to many would seem to be common sense. Forests, especially mature forests, are best able to capture carbon dioxide when they're left standing instead of being cut down to make wood products. Trees naturally lock up carbon in their bodies, and even when they eventually topple, they can continue to sequester carbon for centuries as they slowly decay and eventually turn into soil. A group of 100 scientists wrote to members of Congress in 2020, quote, "The growing consensus of scientific findings is that to effectively mitigate the worst impacts of climate change, we must not only move beyond fossil fuel consumption, but we must also substantially increase the protection of our native forest in order to absorb more CO2 from the atmosphere and store more, not less, carbon in our forests." In the state of Washington, however, the law claims something entirely different. In January 2020, major players in Washington's powerful wood product sector choreographed legislation that, little more than flourish of the legislative pen, wished away the timber industry's significant carbon dioxide emissions. That legislation, House Bill 2528, and a companion bill, was in many ways an empty law. It did nothing to change the daily operations of the industry, nor did it establish or modify any state forestry programs or impose any new standards. The bill was the brainchild of an obscure quasi and academic group at the University of Washington. It's called the Consortium for Research on Renewable Industrial Materials, or CARM, founded in 1996 by the University of Washington and logging giant Weyerhaeuser, along with five other big timber companies: Plum Creek, Boise Cascade, Potlatch, Simpson Lumber, and Union Camp. CARM has gained a measure of credibility through its affiliations with forestry programs at 17 universities across the country, from Oregon State to Yale.
I think that's a really good place to start. Sounds like, you know, you're asserting here that what they did was kind of trick the Washington State Legislature into what seems like a messaging bill suggesting that current timber industry practices are basically good for the climate. So I want to talk more about that, but I actually had never heard of the group CARM. So could you talk about, you mentioned who founded it and who I think is behind it, but talk a little bit more about that group and what kinds of practices they endorse, the policies they research and advocate for, et cetera.
You know, I think CARM is really thrilled by the fact that you have never heard of them. I think their effectiveness is due in part to their, you know, obscure, no one has heard of this organization position. And I think that they're able to influence policy, not just in the Washington legislature, but more broadly nationally. And we'll talk about their impacts nationally. But so it goes beyond just this one bill, but they've established themselves as the go-to source for all kinds of misinformation on the climate, wildfire, wood pellet, and so on. Basically, their position is that for every environmental problem on the planet, logging is part of the answer, or more logging,
right?
And that wood products are a better place to store carbon than in living forests. That's their thesis.
Yeah, there's this shocking quote from their director of science and sustainability saying, "Buildings are the global carbon sinks of the future. In the future, we are going to have more forests in buildings than on the landscape," which is pretty wild on its face.
Well, I guess that her idea of a Saturday afternoon hike is take the elevator to the top floor.
right.
This quote is from Elaine O'Neill, who is, as you said, head of the science program, that she gave in front of the Washington legislature in 2020. And it's incredibly chilling, I think, and scary, and fits neatly within what the Trump administration is trying to do.
Right. Yeah, because obviously she's saying that as a positive thing, where I see that, and I think a lot of our listeners would read that as something we want to avoid. And I always have to say, when we're talking about the timber industry, that tree plantations are not forests. So if we call them forests, we're already kind of playing on their turf. But you were about to, I think, make a broader point about her and a little bit more about what Corum does.
So about 5 years ago, or maybe more, Corum moved from its headquarters at the University of Washington in Seattle to really close to where you are in Corvallis, Oregon, next to the campus of Oregon State. Mm. And you can see Corum's fingerprints on a new forest management plan that the USU College of Forestry has put out this summer for its research forest north of town, the McDonald Dunn Forest. You may have heard of it. It basically continues or expands logging and calls it sustainable, which is right out of the playbook that Corum has devised. Corum is very similar to other organizations that have been established to help distribute propaganda for industries. For example, you may have heard of the Tobacco Institute in the 1950s. They denied the link between cancer and smoking. Mm-hmm. There's the Heritage Institute a couple of decades later that basically denied the facts about climate change. And what this group, Corum, is doing, the same job, but for the timber industry. It's trying to protect logging against any kind of regulation that would restrict it. They want to make sure that logging goes forward unfettered with any kind of environmental consideration. And actually, that's in their mission statement, is to fight environmental regulations. The other thing is that this organization has enlisted colleges across the country, from Yale to Oregon State, as affiliates. And it's troubling to me to realize that these schools are actually teaching things that are not true, or if they aren't teaching them, they're affiliated with Corum.
Yeah.
That's my next research project, is find out whether these colleges are teaching the thesis that it's better to put carbon in wood products than in living trees.
Well, that is certainly what a huge part of the OSU Forestry Department is teaching. And, you know, it is this really pernicious problem, because you have, like at OSU, you have some really groundbreaking professors doing work under that college umbrella, that College of Forestry umbrella, like Bev Law and a bunch of others that I should be able to name but can't off the top of my head. But then by...
You should mention Mark Harmon. He is like the guru of the bunch, but certainly Bev Law and William Ripple, and there's many others.
Right, and so you have all of these folks, but then the overriding energy and funding, et cetera, goes into this promotion of forestry as sustainable, you know, propping up the wood products industry, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, if you just, I would encourage anyone to go check out the College of Forestry's admittedly pretty cool looking building, but you go in there and it's just like the Stimson Lumber boardroom, the Weyerhaeuser classroom, the, you know, Starker Forest lab. It's the entire thing, seemingly, if you just look at all the plaques, seems to be funded by the timber industry, which it doesn't mean that all the stuff that they're teaching and researching is bad, but just that kind of poisoning of the well with all of that industry money and influence is so evident. But
I just want to follow up on that, because that's a really good point. And I'll be really quick here, but their new dean, and I can't remember his name, but he wrote a piece in one of the peer-reviewed journals last February that said, yeah, we acknowledge that storing more carbon in forests can help the climate, but it's a distraction. We should focus on ending fossil fuels and let the industry do what it wants.
Interesting. I gotta have you send me that article or
I
that
would
piece.
Be happy to. We can post it in in the comment if you want.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So this goes back to, just to bring us back to this article and Corium, or just that we should probably refer to it every once in a while, not by that acronym. So the Consortium for Research on Renewable Industrial Materials.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is a mouthful. So mostly we'll say Corium, but every once in a while, you know, remind folks what the name is. Right. So obviously they would vehemently disagree with your characterization. What's your argument for why folks should read what they do as fundamentally acting in bad faith or as carrying water for the industry, as opposed to people with good intentions who are having a good faith disagreement on the science?
So you have to understand the context for all of this, and it is politics. You know, we are seeing that with the current effort to repeal the roadless rule and then so many other things. It's all politics. What Corium is doing is trying to tilt the politics in the favor of more logging and in favor of the timber industries. If you were running for an office, you would do something that's called oppo research. You got to know what your opponent is doing. Mm-hmm. And this piece in the Earth Island Journal on Corium should basically be viewed by the forest advocate community as oppo research. This is the inside story of what the timber industry is doing to fight you all. And you need to be armed with better information. And this group is pulling a lot of strings behind the scenes without any transparency. And I hope this article will educate and inform the public about what this industry is doing and what they're up to.
So on that note of what they're up to and what they did in the Washington legislature, where they got the legislature to declare that, you know, current industry practices create a net sequestering effect on carbon, what's been the real world effect there? Was that more of like a statement bill? Has there been real world fallout with that?
Well, a couple of things that pertain to that. First of all, the Corium was able to sneak this through the legislature and got the governor to sign it without any attention from the media, the big, you know, forest advocacy groups like the Sierra Club or the Center for Responsible Forestry up in Washington. And I just lost my train of thought.
Oh, no, that's okay. So I was just asking, you know, what the, like, fallout or real world impact has been in that bill.
Okay. So again, it's not just one bill, but this bill is part of a broader strategy to make people think that logging is the answer. And in order to do that, they have to bend and manipulate science and gaslight the public. So, for example, you've seen maybe on TV these ads that, you know, very, very nicely produced, some kids walking through a forest, and the voiceover says, "For every tree we cut down, we will plant three young ones, and it'll be great for the climate, sustainability, blah, 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 blah." What they don't say is that those little trees that they plant will not be the equal of the one big tree they cut down for 100 years or so. So it's a negative, immediate negative hit on the climate and just a bunch of gaslighting to go with it.
So speaking of that kind of gaslighting and that misinformation, you know, I have been really disappointed with how many Democrats, including like really intelligent climate advocates, like the former Washington Governor Jay Inslee, you know, whatever you think of him, like I firmly believe that he takes climate change seriously and wants to do the right thing. But not even him. You know, I personally know lawmakers in Oregon who are smart, who care about forests, who care about climate change, but are really taken in by things like mass timber and just a lot of industry talking points. They take those as baseline, right? And so why do you think that so many lawmakers that are intelligent, that are well-meaning, really get taken for a ride by the industry and are so easily misled?
You know, I guess that's a testament to the effectiveness of Corium and its messaging. Mm-hmm. And you know, And also, it's the learning curve is a little bit slow here with the other side. And I don't think people realize how effective an argument protecting forests for the climate can really be. And I don't think that message is getting home to these legislators. When they realize the science, when they see the science, understand the science behind that, and the lack of science beyond the things they have been led to believe, they should come around if they're truly smart people.
Yeah, I agree with that. I wonder sometimes if, I think that for well-intentioned legislators, they're offering them a win-win is so tempting, especially folks that either legislate in a swing district or just, you know, want to say work on environmental conservation, but also maybe have sort of empathy for the plight of kind of rural Oregonians or rural Washingtonians who think that their timber way of life is being impacted. And so when an industry group like this says, well, hey, you can have it both ways. We can have it all. We can have the climate benefits and the industry benefits. To me, I see that as very tempting. What do you think?
So this is really a fight over the big old trees that store the most carbon, that are the richest and densest carbon sequestration machines that we have. Mm-hmm. And I got to say that, you know, first of all, I'm not against using wood products. I'm not against mm-hmm. cutting down trees in certain circumstances, for sure. We need wood. But can't we find trees to log that don't have an impact on the climate? The trees in our region, the Coast Range, along the Pacific Coast from Northern California to Alaska, are the most dense, carbon-dense trees in the world, forests in the world. And the idea is that protecting these forests, protecting the older, the mature and old-growth forests and these trees in this forest is going to do more for the climate than almost any. There could be, you know, there are certainly lots of lands that are being used for tree farms and so on. Part of the solution is let those trees grow a little bit longer, maybe twice as long, as Beverly Law of Oregon State proposed. Mm-hmm. So there are solutions that are win-win, but what the industry wants to do is they want the older, bigger tree because that's where the money is, right?
Yeah.
The bigger the tree, the more money you can sell it for, and it's all about the bottom line.
Right, and that kind of gets us into, the territory of what's happening at the federal level, which we don't have a ton of time to go into. But obviously, we've done a lot of shows, and we'll continue to do a lot of shows on what's happening at the federal level with, like you say, with the roadless rule rescission, you know, with all of the kind of junk science around wildfire and logging around wildfire, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, I was wanting to get to this, and what you were just saying, I feel like is a pretty good segue, actually. I wanted to check back in on your book, Canopy of Titans. So if you wanted to say anything else before we move on to the book, please feel free. But I wanted to just check in with that because you and I have done an interview about a year and a half ago about the book. And I mean, it's just as relevant today, obviously.
Now, this story on Quorum would have been a great addition to that book, but you know, maybe it'll be the linchpin of a sequel.
Yeah.
You never know. But yeah, thank you for talking about the book. Canopy of Titans was published 2 years now, and it's doing pretty well in terms of, you know, I mean, I guess so many people coming up to me. I do events up and down the Northwest, across the Northwest. I'd like to do some beyond the Northwest, but I haven't yet. But it's, I wouldn't say that we're on the New York Times bestseller list, but you know, the people who come to our events are just very thrilled to hear about it and to read about what's going on in their forests and why they're important to the climate. And that's something that has not been, I mean, that's new. I mean, trees have always been, go back thousands and tens of thousands of years, trees have always been regulating the climate. They take in carbon dioxide and they spit out oxygen. We've been doing that for a long, long time. So the idea that protecting forests for the climate isn't something new, something that was just recently dreamed up by a bunch of tree huggers. It's basic science. And
well, tell just real quick, while we're on the subject of your book, Canopy of Titans, if folks haven't heard of it, again, and it is also co-written with your longtime collaborator, Jessica Applegate, give folks just kind of the back of the jacket description of the book.
Yeah, and thank you for mentioning Jessica, who did a tremendous job with the writing and the research on this book. So Canopy of Titans is basically a book about the rainforests along the Pacific coast from Northern California through Western Oregon, Western Washington, along the British Columbia coast, and into Alaska, the Tongass, and so on, further north. And, you know, it explains that this forest has more carbon per acre than any forest in the world, which means that it is like the world's most carbon-dense terrestrial ecosystem. And so Canopy of Titans talks about how it was liquidated and things that, and the impacts of that liquidation on not just forests, but biodiversity and indigenous people. We get into those, each one of those issues in great detail. In the book, at the Glasgow Climate Summit in 2021 in Glasgow, Scotland, and basically how the idea of forests as a natural climate solution was simply not even on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I can say that since then, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is the world's leading scientific authority on climate, they have included natural climate solutions, including protecting forests, as an essential part of their way of battling the climate crisis.
Well, they must have read Canopy of Titans, right?
Well, I think so. I think what happened was that our sources, particularly William Umar at Tufts University, got to them and made the case that this is essential. And so the book came out a year later, so we can't claim any credit at all, other than being, you know, deeply impressed that the IPCC took this stand. And I should say that this is, so the science on climate and forests is evolving quickly. And one of the reasons why you mentioned Democratic legislatures are not really on board with this is because, you know, it wasn't that long ago that most people thought that the best place to store carbon was in wood products. That's no longer the case. We now know, and the science is accumulating by the day, that protecting forests, keeping carbon in forests is the only solution alongside reducing fossil fuel consumption.
Well, I think that is a very hopeful note to end on. And you do talk in the article about, you know, how some of this industry misinformation is waning in its power. And so I think that's a good reminder that a lot of the work we have to do is not necessarily convincing folks, but just some basic education and reminding people of kind of what's in front of our faces. So on that note, you know, your book, The Canopy of Titans, people can find that at any bookstore in the Northwest, I imagine. Your new article, Greenwashing in the Green State, in Earth Island Journal. Anything else you want to highlight? And where can people find your work? Anything you want to plug, etc.?
I have been editor of Cascadia Times in Portland for 30 years. And our website, all our stuff is on our website. We had print issues from the 1990s and the 2000s, we've been online, but everything is online at www.times.org, T-I-M-E-S.org. And you'll find this article there too.
Man, I still can't believe you have that URL. That's a valuable URL right there.
It's valuable. You know, it pays to get to the front of the line to get there first. We got that URL in 1996. We might have invented the internet. You know, who knows?
So, okay, last thing, Paul, before I let you go, is there anything we missed or any other things that you want to highlight?
Yeah, one thing I want to mention is that I have another article coming out in Earth Island Journal in late September on wood pellets. The wood pellet industry is one of these that is built basically on misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
and what is good for the climate is a myth, and it's fascinating. And so look for my article in Earth Island Journal in the coming days.
Well, great. Well, thank you for that. I will be looking for that. Paul Koberstein, thanks so much for joining me again on Coast Range Radio, and thank you so much for the great work that you do. Best of luck, and let's talk again soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. Coast Range Radio is an independent production. If you like the show, please help me grow the audience, tell your friends about it, follow us on Instagram. Best of all, directly share it with a couple folks by texting the link to our podcast feed. Once again, the show email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Reach out anytime. Thank you so much for listening. Let's make it through this together.
Radio's greatest application is in broadcasting mass entertainment. Probably one of the best ways to get started is to make it a hobby and build an amateur station. It will show you more quickly than anything else whether or not you can succeed in radio.
KBOO.